Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is the second tape on the interview with Mr. Wang Yanglui at San Luis Obispo by Sue Ellen Chen and John E.
Well, you mentioned that you joined the Freemasons in Taiwan, right?
Yes.
And then when you got back home to St. Louis Obispo, that you was initiated in this one, so therefore you belong to two lodges now.
Mm-hmm. I'm a member of both lodges. You see, I only passed the first degree in Taiwan.
There's one question I forgot to backtrack now. Before the 1900, we had all this big population of Chinese in Chinatown because someone was working for the railroad and all that sort of thing and on farms and that. And then you mentioned that the provision used to come into your store and your father would sell these to the Chinese people in this community. Do you recollect how these provisions came down? Did they come down by wagons or did they come in by ship?
They came before the broadcast, Southern Pacific was through. They used to be shipped in to Port San Luis or Port Hartford, which we used to call in the early days Port Hartford, and then transferred over from the ship to the
rail, narrow gauge rail.
Narrow gauge rail, and to come into San Luis. And then from San Luis, it was picked up by transfer
wagons and
low slung transfer wagons used to have to haul freight with.
Freight wagon.
Just a sticks on the side of the bed. Mm-hmm. No sides to it. Mm-hmm. Just the sticks that hold the cargo in.
Mm-hmm. Well, so at that time, the ships came down. It was one important way of transportation.
That's the only. That's the easy way. The
easiest and the safest.
Did your father actually recruit Chinese from the Southern California or only from San Francisco?
Well, they seemed to go towards San Francisco mostly because I imagine that was the main port of entry for the Chinese to come from the Orient over to this country, the land in San Francisco, and they use that as the only place to go, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Los Angeles, I don't hear much about or any Chinese who are landing in Los Angeles.
And then come back here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You did mention that your father traveled all the way down to San Diego and then came back to San Luis Obispo. Mm-hmm. And did he ever mention about he went down Los Angeles, in the 1870s, or he never mentioned that?
There wasn't anything in there, that part of the history that I can recall ever mentioning about Los Angeles.
I see.
The only thing that we can recall was furthest distance of San Diego, and nothing in between, not even mentioning Santa Barbara or any of the other towns along the way.
And he was a cook in San Diego.
Well, he accepted a job as a cook. I imagine anything he can possibly do to get, you know, to survive. That's it. If we can find gold, that's it. Yeah.
It did go a long way when he came back to St. Louis and established his business and became very successful. He played a major role in Chinatown here.
That's right.
Would you say that he is actually the founder of the Chinatown?
Well, everybody assumed that he did. Because everyone looks up to him. He is highly respected among the Caucasians around in this area, because I've never heard anyone say anything about my father being molested. You know, like many other stories they hear about the Chinese. And so, and when I hear of other people, the Caucasians, talk about my father, he was highly respected. Mm-hmm. He's a remarkable man, you know, for to think of what he did as an immigrant coming into this unknown country, you know, brand new to him. And start a business and has his finger in so many projects and activities around here. It's really remarkable.
And
he
also
is a remarkable person in a way.
Definitely. And also he dealt with the non-Chinese so well. He must be very good in language also. And where did he learn the English and how he's...
He wasn't a fluent speaker of English. He knows how to swear very well. Maybe that's how he can get along with his workmen,
uh-huh.
You know, because he cusses at them. But he managed to get by. And that's what's remarkable about that person, you know, with so little English.
Mm-hmm.
And
he can get his hands into so many things.
So many things that even a white man would be a major job, you know, to manage so many things. At one time, this Chinatown here in San Luis, I understand, I was too small to know, but I remember them making a remark that when the railroad was finished and some of those laborers, no place to go but to hang around here and try to find something to do. This Chinatown has grown in population up to almost 800 people.
That was around 1880s.
It must be 1890. Yeah, around just about the turn of the century. Mm-hmm. 1910, 11, 12, right in there. I remember really a thriving Chinatown here. And really busy.
You say 1910?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even though you said he didn't really speak fluently English, but he was a sort of a go-between Caucasian and Chinese,
mm-hmm.
and he managed so well.
Yes, uh-huh.
And the Caucasian trusted him as well as the Chinese people, and mm-hmm. that was rather remarkable.
Other Chinese around here, I don't recall of any disturbances among the Chinese or the Caucasian against the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so not only my dad being so highly respected, but all the other Chinese, I don't remember of any group to try to run the Chinese out of business or anything like that, except one time when there were so many Chinese laundries, there was about three Chinese laundries at one time that I can recall, and I know where they were. The Americans, the Caucasians, tried to start a steam laundry to run the Chinese out. But it didn't work out. The people still stick to the Chinese to do their laundry. And so the steam laundry went out of business.
Were these Chinese laundry around Chinatown or actually?
No, it was spotted different spots of town, roughly estimating one is about a half a mile from the regular center of Chinatown. And another one about three quarter of a mile away, and one down south of town where we'll say about five blocks from here.
When was that approximately? When it was like
the period?
Period, yeah. What year the period, when they start try to run the Chinese laundry away?
The last one that I know of still in existence at that time was around 1909 or something like that, 1910.
I see. So, do you remember who were these people? Were these Chinese laundry run by family members, or they have five partners in the team?
I don't know about partners, but they are not family run. They are just groups that got together and
there's like four or five laundrymen got together, run one store, and the other four or five.
I think a couple of places, two out of three have more than five people, you know, could be 10 people or maybe more. Because you go in there, several of them be ironing away, you know, and some of them be in a back place where they boil the clothes, you know. So it takes quite a few of them to operate one of those.
So today there's no Chinese laundry in St. Louis Obispo?
No Chinese laundry.
It's all gone.
All gone.
When did it completely gone, the Chinese laundry?
The last one, I say,
was 1909?
Around 1909, 1910.
Oh, after that, there was no Chinese laundry?
No.
I see. And, well, back to Johnny's question earlier about Chinese families. Say around the turn of the century, just right after you were born or like when you were a teenage, how many Chinese family with the mud parents,
you mean,
children in Chinatown here?
There were only one big family, which when I say big family, I mean about 13 children.
13 children.
And but the other people who have wives, they don't have any children. They're just man and woman couples, which occupied some of my dad's buildings there, you know, different little buildings that my dad built for them to live.
How many of them approximately do you remember? How many of
how many
these families?
Different families were here?
About Well, like I said,
your family was.
You
one
were
of,
one of the family,
yeah,
and the other
the
family.
It was a Jin family.
Jin.
G-I-N.
G-I-N. Uh huh.
Jin family.
Mm-hmm.
And the other people are some. Two of them are Wong.
Uh-huh.
And that is just couples.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't say it's family.
Uh-huh.
Because they don't have any children.
Children. Uh-huh.
And then there was the Jin family across the street, opposite to the Aloe store.
Uh-huh.
Has two men and wife.
Uh-huh.
And besides that, the priest and his, he has a wife. The priest of the Chinese Josh House.
Mm-hmm.
Chinese Josh House, which is a temple where they all go to worship.
Where was that Josh House? Nearby Aloe's?
Yeah, on the same side of the street of the Aloe's store. It's all owned by my dad.
Uh-huh. Did your father build this Joss house or this priest? Priest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And upstairs floor is one side of the Joss house, and the other side is occupied by the Chinese Freemasons.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. I see.
So there's where they congregate that. To have their
meetings, activities.
That's a
was your father a member of this Freemason? Do you recall?
I'm not quite sure whether he was or not, but apparently he is.
Uh-huh.
I didn't inquire about, when I was a youngster like that. I figured it's none of my business.
Right. Was there any other?
Such a secret society, I was afraid to even ask anybody about anything.
So actually, at that time there was maybe about half a dozen or a little bit more than half a dozen families. I mean, we would say maybe three or four of them actually had any children, the other one was just couples, right?
Just couples.
And the rest of them were single.
Yeah,
they
were just men.
Single
men, hardworking people.
Did this man eventually find a wife from somewhere else?
I imagine so, because they talk about going to China and get a wife, and they wanted to work around here, so they get enough money, and they say that so many times that I just wondered how many really went back to China and got married.
I have no idea how
no
many.
No idea.
I think just a small percentage of them did
uh-huh.
go.
Uh-huh.
And then the other ones that lived here, they probably got adopted to the life over here. And then by the time when they got ready to go, they got so old that they didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm. They talk quite a bit, and when I remember going, they repeated over and over again, "Now make enough money here
mm-hmm.
in this country
mm-hmm.
to go back to China."
Mm-hmm.
Well, just why they want to do that, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I surmise that they go back to China, make enough money to go back to China and live like a king and queen, and be content among our own people back in the old country.
Uh-huh. What was your father's last occupation before he passed away? Or he actually retired?
He wasn't retired. He was still active, with the store. And,
mm-hmm.
and however, at that time, that was after the Depression. He lost everything. So as far as the ranching is concerned, farming is concerned, he lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
he gave up on the farm.
He gave up on the farm then. That was in the 30s, during that depression.
So he just concentrated on
just
the
stuck with the store
stores.
and hang on to the property that he had.
I see. Did he acquire other properties rather than farmland? He leased the farmland or he purchased the farmland?
He leased the farmland because the Chinese weren't supposed to buy property or couldn't.
How about
but
the stores?
He managed, well, the store property, he managed to get that before the law was out, you see.
I see.
So he had foresight enough to, well, in fact, he didn't know the law, you know. It was okay to buy the land, he just bought it.
Besides Louis' store, did he own other property in Chinatown or other than Chinatown area?
He owned the property across the street where he moved the original Aubrey store. You know, he owned that that I know of. And later on he sold it. No, I can't recall.
But that was quite an achievement already in the old days that he can acquire so many properties that he can build on.
Yeah, it's remarkable how he can go around the country and here's a good piece of land to rent, to run a seed farm or something like that, you know. And manage to get around. How did he get around to these Caucasian or other foreign people around here, like Portuguese and Spaniards? How do you manage to get and to rent a piece of property from some other people other than the Chinese?
Oh yes.
Yeah, that's the remarkable part.
Right. About the brickyard, did he actually sell the brickyard to someone else or he just closed down?
He sold it. He sold it to an Ogiati family, Ogiati, not Portuguese, but sound like Italian. as a slaughterhouse, made a slaughterhouse out of where they slaughter cattle and hogs for the market.
So, did he actually make some money out of that, or simply?
He seemed to have the monopoly. He was the only
brickyard
in this area.
And after that, was there any other brickyards? Because you say after he sold to his family.
And then later on, some Caucasian opened up the San Luis Brick Company.
I see.
Let's see, I'll try to recall the date of that. I don't know just when that started. But that brickyard just sold out about 2 years ago. That was the end of this
brickyard business.
Brickyard, the Caucasian. So there are no more brickyards in this area.
Oh, I see. So how about those Chinese workers who work in the brickyards after your father sold the brickyard? And these Chinese went to somewhere else, or
they have
follow
to
your father to the seed farm?
Well, to the quite a few of them go work in the seed farm. Put them to work in the seed farm. And either they're old and passed away, or went back to China, figuring that that's the last place to be.
When did the, you said about 1910, that's when the heyday was in around Chinatown when they had a population of 800 people. When did the population start to decline? At the time after the Depression, or did it just gradually drop down?
Gradually dropped off, Tony, around 1912, 14, 16, right in there. I can recall the diminishing of the Chinese people around here, whether they moved away or go back to China, what have you.
It's just to
start to gradually go away. And the younger ones, of course, they head for the big city, you know, Los Angeles or San Francisco, Sacramento or whatever.
So mostly Chinese would work for your father in either brickyards or sea farm.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, were the brickyard and sea farm, you know, running the same time period, or actually the sea farms came after
the
brickyard?
The sea farm continued on
uh-huh.
after the brickyard went up.
Uh-huh. But it was the time that both were in existence
at
the same time.
Yeah, at the same time, yes. Mm-hmm.
So when was the brickyard closed down? Can you recall? Probably easiest way is to recall how old you were at that time.
Yes, I could be 19 or 20 years old, I think.
Uh-huh. So it's about around the 1913.
14s.
Yeah, I see. And most of the Chinese later, did they go out and open up their own business? Besides laundry.
Yes, perhaps some of them will go to whatever they can find to do. But not very many new businesses open up in Chinatown. It seemed like the old people that ran the stores or gambling houses or opium dens or what have you in Chinatown will continue to operate and stay on that way for years and years.
Uh-huh. Can you recall how many stores in Chinatown, say, at the turn of a century? What type of stores you have besides your father's general merchandise? And was there any restaurant, Chinese restaurant?
There was one Chinese restaurant that was owned by a Qin family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall whether I mentioned it to you before.
Mm-hmm.
That this family had 13 children.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah, wait a minute, no, I'll take you over there. Oh, let me get my sweater.
Okay.
You mentioned about the Jin family. Could that be the Qin?
No,
G-I-N. G-I-N in English, but
no.
But Tong, why could it be Qin?
No, not Jin.
My
Jin.
Jin.
Oh. Jin. Just the way it's written, G-I-N.
Uh-huh. Jin.
Uh-huh. It's not Chin.
My Chin.
Jin.
Not Chin.
Uh-huh. So,
same Jin and
Chin.
Oh, I see. So, at that time, the Chinese restaurant was patroned
big family.
Mm-hmm.
His father must be a good cook because he had a thriving business in Chinatown and the only one there, so he had it all.
And catering for Chinese or both Chinese and Caucasian?
Chinese only.
I see.
Because they don't know how to speak English, you know. So strictly Chinese. In fact, the whole family wasn't speaking English until they decided to put them through grammar school around here.
Was that the family that also that was involved in that candy making business? Is that part of that family?
That one of the sons.
One of the sons.
I see.
Oh. No, one of the grandsons.
Oh.
That's a grandson that was running the candy store.
Candy store.
Yeah.
I see. But actually, at that time, the two major family was that family and your family,
yeah,
right?
That's the
that
only,
was the main.
That's the only, actually, families,
yeah.
What I call family, man and wife with children.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So
and all the rest, just.
The couples
just
or single
couple,
men.
Either couple or just three, four couples,
mm-hmm.
and the rest is just all men.
Did you recall that you go to the restaurant, I mean, as a family, or?
Oh, yeah, we used to go there because that's the only place in existence. And we don't eat at home, and somebody invites us. We never go there by our own accord.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody invited us, we sure we follow.
So it become like a social
mm-hmm.
gathering place
so,
for
some,
the Chinese event.
Mm-hmm.
They cook genuine Chinese dishes?
Yeah, strictly Chinese food.
Mm-hmm, I see.
How many seatings did that capacity would they have about roughly?
Oh, I don't know.